Hello, Liberty lovers, and welcome to the Liberty Mike podcast, broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I am Michael, and I am here with Liberty Larry.
How's it going?
And, well, happy Thanksgiving,
every
American.
Yeah. We're here with you bright and early today. This is normally an evening deal.
Yeah. And I offered Liberty Larry a drink. I said, hey, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, and you got 5 hours till you got to be at work. Yeah. Now seems like a good time for whiskey, doesn't it?
I don't have it in the morning like that. Just can't do it. And I've been up most of the night smoking a bacon-wrapped turkey.
That sounds terrible. So
it sounds amazing. And it's going to be amazing. Mm. I'm excited. We did two. We usually do one in the oven, and then we do one on the smoker. And this year, we wrapped the smoker one in bacon. So, I've done it before. It came out really good. So, I'm excited to see how this one came out.
Well, I hope you enjoy it.
I intend to.
And, you know, as long as it's Thanksgiving, I'd say, you know, I'm thankful that we still live in a country, at least so far, where we can put our complaints about our government out on the airwaves. So far. It might just be that we don't have enough listeners yet for them to care. Hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's still some other people out there singing the same song we are.
Yeah.
But they're getting shut down one by one, though. So.
Well, and I'm thankful that we get to do this anyway, because I do really enjoy doing this podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't get any feedback on the last episode, like none at all. It's weird, because we started this in like February, right? Somewhere in there was our first episode that we put out. And somehow, I got more feedback when we had like 12 listeners than I do now. I mean, we have many more than 12 listeners now.
Yeah.
And yet somehow I got lots of feedback then and I get like no feedback now.
Maybe it's all going to your email.
But I announced very clearly that I do not have access to the Liberty Mike email right now. Oh. And I still haven't fixed that. But I'm working on it. If anybody has hosting suggestions that provide free email addresses, let me know. Because I got a couple of weeks before my current hosting subscription ends. So I'm trying to find the right fit.
Yeah.
And we'll see. But email is definitely a requirement.
Yeah. Gotta have the email.
Yeah. And I could give out, you know, it's still a lot of the people that listen to this podcast know how to get in touch with me without email. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I guess enough of the Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And we can go ahead and jump right into it. And it's funny that we were kind of planning on talking about this anyway, because I had a conversation with a guy last week who... I was telling him about the podcast. I was talking to somebody else about the podcast. And he said, oh, you do a podcast? What's it about? And so, you know, I gave him the quick background and, you know, those politics stuff. And he was like, oh, yeah, well, I'm always trying to find something new to listen to. And I was like, well, you know, of course, I promoted
our
podcast, of course. then a little bit later, he was like, so where do you fall on the spectrum?
Yeah.
And I looked at him confusedly for a moment and I said, what spectrum are you talking about? And the way he presented it to me was really like really caught me off guard. He said, well, like, do you support Trump or are you against him? Like, that's the new political spectrum.
Yeah. It's an interesting question.
Yeah. He said, do you support Trump or are you against him? And I said, no.
Right.
Because that's not what it's about at all.
Well, the lines are so blurred. Like, it's weird.
Yeah, it's about the policy, not the person.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And so there are some things that Trump has done that I support and many things that he's done that I don't. And it's not really about him. Like, we don't spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about the people, because I think the people are kind of irrelevant.
They are, in many ways.
And then, you know, and even in my answer to him, I was like, I don't think that the, like, all right, well, the Trump or not thing is really off base, I think. Like, I don't think about it that way at all. But even if you go into the traditional look at left-right, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, you know, however you want to define that spectrum, I was like, we're a libertarian podcast. And it's not on that spectrum. Like, if you have your, if you have your point here for the right, nobody can see what I'm doing. So, you know, all right, so I'll try and describe, like, if you have a line between far right and far left, however you define those things, then libertarianism isn't anywhere on that line. You have to make a triangle to put libertarianism there. Like, we're off somewhere else. It's a completely different way of looking at politics, I think, than either of those.
Well, and there's actually a philosophy behind it. And most libertarians, I say most, pretty well all libertarians, try to stay consistent with that philosophy, however they interpret it. Now, they all kind of interpret it a little differently, but there is... there's something grounded to it. Like, there's a base for libertarianism. It just doesn't exist with the other two parties.
Well, not anymore. I mean, there was a base for them, too. Particularly conservatism had I think, a strong philosophical base at some point. And liberalism did, too. But the problem is that the left-right divide, or the Democrat-Republican divide, doesn't hold to that at all. I don't think that, I don't think that any of those divisions are a useful heuristic anymore. And it... like I said, it was interesting that we were planning to talk about this anyway, because I got a call yesterday, and I feel a little bad about it. So, because I have been getting a lot of, like, junk phone calls, you know, telling me about new health plan that I can get on, or...
your car insurance warranty.
Yeah, exactly. All that stuff. And I'd gotten, like, four or five of them already early in the morning, and I got this phone call at, like, 10 a.m. But remember, I had to get a new phone because my phone died and I'd never backed up my contacts.
You don't have all your contacts.
So it could be somebody that I actually want to talk to. So I'm having to answer every call, whether I recognize the number or not. And so I got this call in. It was a number that I didn't recognize. But I was irritated at this point. And so I answered with, "What do you want?" And instead of a computer voice, some guy was like, And I was like, "Oh man, I'm so sorry. what do you want?"
Thought you were automated.
And it was a guy calling from the Libertarian Party to do a survey. And I probably would have done the survey anyway, but after answering like that, I definitely
you were obligated now.
And so, I apologize and I explained, and he was like, "Well, you may not be surprised that you're not the first to answer that way." But we went through the questions, and some of the questions were like where the Libertarian Party falls. And so he actually asked this question, "Do you consider libertarianism a more right-wing, left-wing, centrist, or off-the-spectrum philosophy?" And that was actually the question.
Oh,
and I was like, "Oh, well, off the spectrum."
That's easy,
And then he asked me if I thought the Libertarian Party was more right-leaning, left-leaning, centrist, or off the spectrum. And I said, "Well, that's kind of a complicated answer."
Yeah.
I said, "I think that there's a difference in how the Libertarian Party tries to present itself to the public and where the leadership is in the Libertarian Party right now."
And that's true.
And I said, "So I don't know how you're going to, what you're going to put here, but I would say that the Libertarian Party tries to present itself as a centrist party."
Yeah.
And that I think that the Libertarian leadership currently is left-leaning.
Yeah. Oh, I'd agree with that.
But again, you know, like back to the original point, it was just interesting that I got that call.
That you got that call at this time. Yeah.
Yeah. When I've been thinking about this a lot anyway.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, like, how do we redefine it? And I've been trying to redefine it since the last campaign, since 2016 campaign, because I think that there was a lot of evidence that the traditional left-right divide was no longer a useful heuristic to try and divide up the interests. excuse me. Good thing I got that water bottle. And while I like Dave Smith's liberty versus authoritarianism, or like if you extend it farther, anarchy versus totalitarianism.
Yeah.
Right. I like that divide. I think that that's an important spectrum for me when I'm looking at governments, but I don't think that that's really useful, again, to divide up the electorate.
Yeah.
I think the new divide really is, do you believe in self-government or world government?
Yeah.
I think it's the more locally focused or world globalism.
Globalism. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that that's the reason why a lot of the people, after Bernie's campaign fizzled, went to Donald Trump, not to Hillary Clinton.
Yep. Because, yeah, say what you want about him, but he's not a globalist. He's absolutely, I mean, he's a nationalist, which is not exactly what I would call preferable either. But, I mean, he's definitely not a globalist.
Well, part of it is the recognition of what socialism really means.
Yeah.
That you can't bring in everybody. Yeah. There's a reason that there's walls around socialist countries.
Yeah. Well, and it's the same thing with Bernie Sanders. I mean, even the Bernie Sanders recognize that you can't have socialism and open borders. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that it doesn't work. Like, it will, mm-hmm. that is doomed to fail.
Yeah.
Quicker than it will already.
And as more evidence, and this gives us an opportunity to call back to some previous episodes. So we were talking some about the results of the Patriot Act in the last episode with the surveillance state and so forth. Yeah. Now, quietly.
Yeah. Oh, ever so quietly.
Quietly. There were a bunch of Patriot Act provisions that were due to sunset at the end of the year.
Yep.
And they have been extended to March of 2020, which isn't a long extension, but it is an extension.
Yeah.
On the back of this continuing resolution bill to keep the government from shutting down.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with the government shutting down, of course.
Yeah.
But on the back of this must-pass spending bill, they threw in an extension of all these provisions of the Patriot Act for another 3 months.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, again, that like if you're talking about like traditional Democrat, you're looking at the liberal civil rights, individual freedom kind of base. I mean, that's not, and the point here is that's not what the Democrat Party is anymore.
No,
because the Democrat controlled House just passed this bill ignoring your Fourth Amendment rights.
Yeah. And coming up when we learned in school, I mean, that was when we were learning about the different parties, I mean, that was one of their big planks was mm-hmm. that type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, but it just goes to show neither party really represents what they're trying to represent anyway.
Yeah. And then, of course, it was signed by the president, the Republican president, who just signed in a spending bill that increases spending by $300 billion dollars a year. And, of course, makes it the biggest spending bill in the history of governments everywhere.
signed by a Republican president.
Yes, the small government Republicans.
Exactly.
Sure. So, I mean, I don't... I think most of our crowd is kind of a younger crowd, but for those of you that aren't part of the younger crowd, it might be time to re-examine these parties and see if the party that you joined back in the, in the 80s or whatever.
Or even the 90s.
Yeah. Are the Reagan Republicans still represented in the Republican Party?
Yeah.
Are the Clinton Democrats still represented in the Democrat Party?
Yeah.
I mean... Or the Kennedy Democrat, like however you want to look
however,
at it.
Yeah.
It may not be the party that you joined.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with that.
Or that you aligned yourself with it. You don't have to have joined the party, obviously. But I think that the real question now is whether it is a government that supports local control or wants to pass authority up.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that goes candidate by candidate. So, like, Hillary Clinton is absolutely a globalist. Like, there's no question about it. In some of these elections, you end up with situations where you have two globalists basically running against each other. I mean, you could, potentially,
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's... But it's... Because that's not... While that's while that's the spectrum that the electorate is looking at, it's not really the one they're looking at. It's different.
Yeah, and I don't know that the electorate as a whole is looking at that either. But well,
looking at it that way, but they're voting based off of it that way, I would argue.
Yeah. Well, there's nationalists and globalists in each party. Yeah. That's kind of the point right there, is that I think this is the new divide in American politics. And it hasn't structurally changed the parties.
Yeah.
But I think that that's where things are moving. Yeah. And it may cause a split in the parties. And there's certainly been a lot of trouble within the parties because of this kind of divide, I think.
Absolutely.
The Sanders-Clinton divide was really important.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the Trump-Bush divide in the Republican Party was also very important.
Yeah.
And as a result of all that, it might give the libertarians a chance to step in there and say, hey, yeah, we've always thought that you should.
Yeah, we're consistent on this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. We want local control.
Yeah.
People, you know, we divide down to the individual.
Yeah.
Like, it's your house.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this isn't the order that I was planning on going into this, but it seems like a good time to transition to this big story, which I think is an important one, out of Utah. There's a lady, her name is Tilly Buchanan.
Yeah.
She's being charged as a sex offender in Utah because her stepsons walked in on her topless. Okay. Hmm. So, like, the fuller story is that she and her husband were hanging drywall in their garage. They removed their tops because all this gypsum dust in the air. They were trying to avoid getting all this dust in their clothing.
Yeah.
These kids walked into the garage while they were in there working.
Yeah.
And so I guess what's kind of the important part here, like what may have made it into a bigger issue, is that when they walked in on her, you know, she's like sat them down and spoke with them about gender equality and how you know, this shouldn't be a shameful thing and so on.
Yeah.
Now the incident was reported by the children's actual mother.
Okay.
I'm not sure how. There was like some kind of unrelated investigation by social services in Utah, and it gave her the opportunity to bring it up. I'm thinking it's probably some kind of custody question or something.
I was going to say, some kind of fight between the two parents.
Yeah, you know? But I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a guess. And it turns out you're right, because when we were talking about this the other night, I said I just thought like maybe one of the kids mentioned it to a friend or something like that.
Yeah.
The kids are like 9, 10, and 13.
Okay.
And that, you know, maybe one of the kids mentioned it to a friend and some mother or some teacher got, you know,
got wind of it. Yeah.
Started clutching pearls and like had to report it.
Yeah.
And you said, and your first thought was that, well, it was probably their mother.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as you said step parents were involved, I mean, that's just immediately where you go.
Yeah. So as a result of this, she was charged with 3 counts of lewdness involving a child in Utah, which is a misdemeanor, but it could also force her to register as a sex offender for the next 10 years.
That's insane. Right.
Because I thought that this was such a good way of talking about it, I did write down the stuff that, so the prosecutor, all right, so her defense attorneys.
Yeah.
Are related to the Free the Nipple campaign,
okay,
which I was not familiar with before this.
I'm only vaguely familiar with it. Yeah. I have seen this campaign floating around, though.
Yeah, this is apparently like a reasonably sized movement from women that are pushing, well, not just women, but that are pushing to have laws apply equally.
Yeah.
So if men can take their shirts off, women can take their shirts off, essentially.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary on it so that I could figure out what this whole thing
so you could understand it better.
Yeah. There were 2 big topics.
Yeah.
Like, one of them was public breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Which has been an issue for a long time.
Which is the one that I'm most familiar with, because usually when I've seen it brought up, that's the frame it's usually brought up in.
Yeah, I mean, I got the impression that most of it was just about gender equality.
Yeah.
That that both genders should have the same rights and privileges, or restrictions for that matter. So if men can take their shirts off, women can take their shirts off. The only difference is gender, and so therefore there shouldn't be a divide.
Yeah.
And they kept calling back to how there used to be laws preventing men from taking their shirts off in public too.
Yeah.
But they changed the law so that men can, but women still couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's unfair.
Well,
maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
But anyway,
we are different.
Yeah. So her defense attorneys sent a letter to the prosecutors in this case, demanding that they drop the charges and seal her record. And I pulled this paragraph from that letter because I thought it was a really good approach.
Okay.
This is, because Tilly Buchanan is a woman, says the state of Utah, she is not allowed to strut shirtless through her own home. Because Tilly Buchanan is a woman, she is not free to display her body with pride, but must instead conceal it in shame, even in the privacy of her own home. Because Tilly Buchanan is a woman, her bare chest is censured as being inherently pornographic and perverse, while her husband's bare chest is celebrated as an emblem of strength and pride. Because Tilly Buchanan is a woman, and only because she is a woman, the state now seeks to condemn her as a child sex offender for engaging in the exact same non-sexual conduct as her lawfully faultless husband. Tilly Buchanan is being singled out for prosecution solely on the basis of sex.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. I think that's actually a really smart way to attack it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Which is why I wrote it down.
Nice.
this is like the worst level of the government inserting itself into your own home.
Exactly. Now,
and think of the implications of this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if any kid walks in on a parent naked.
Yeah.
Is that parent like liable for prosecution as a sex offender? I mean
that's insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's my house. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Can't I decide what I'm going to wear in my own home?
House? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Unreal. And then I came across the Free the Nipple campaign, and I was like, okay, well, you know, I can get on board with this. I understand what you're promoting.
Yeah.
Except I will say there was this one girl in the video who she only got to talk for a few seconds as she was passing the documentary
camera.
Kind of
man on the street.
Yeah. And she's topless. It's a young girl. She's like probably in her early 20s.
Yeah.
Give or take. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And she's got written all over her body, still not asking for it.
Yeah.
And she makes some comments about rape culture and so on. And I was like, okay, well, if this is something because you're saying, well, I should be able to, be free to display my body in public if I want to. Okay, absolutely. I agree. If it's going to be, I should be able to be free to display my body in public too. And I'm going to shame you if you look at me.
Now then, we have a problem.
then I have a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Now, and I, it was just this one thing, but that's the approach that this girl was taking with it. Still not asking for it, not asking to be raped just because I'm showing my boobs in public.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Yeah.
But like, if it's going to be a thing, I don't know. She just
the
it
attitude.
Was abrasive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I might be
could be turned off.
Well, I might be putting more on. Yeah. Putting more on what she means by all that than what she actually means.
Anytime you have a movement, something like that, you're going to have people in that movement that are alongside what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I agree. Like, if she wants to display her body in public, that if somebody grabs her, that's a problem.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, I agree with her there. But if it's going to be and don't you look at me. It's like the women that wear these like really low cut shirts and they'll lean over and then they'll get on to you for looking at their cleavage. And you're like, well,
why'd you put it out there?
Yeah.
Like, okay. But eyes only have so many places to go.
Yeah, public display is a public display.
Exactly.
So, but then I started thinking more. I mean, I think that we can agree on morality legislation generally, which is what this is.
Oh yeah.
It's this idea, like he said in the letter, this idea that a woman's breasts are inherently pornographic and perverse.
Right? Yeah.
Like, that's kind of absurd.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with morality legislation. I was reminded of this quote by Robert Heinlein. I won't have it exactly right, so I'm going to say I'm paraphrasing, although I think it's pretty close.
Yeah.
He said, "It is a truism that any group, cult, or sect will legislate its beliefs into law if given the political power to do so."
Right.
And, you know, this is one of those kinds of things. And this is absolutely. Utah. This is a Mormon state, right? Like, yeah. You know, this lewdness thing. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I think it would apply here.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there's, you know, this is a Baptist state primarily, and
yep.
There's certainly like strong moral.
Well, and you get into that with alcohol in the South.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the laws have loosened up a lot on that now, but like blue laws were a thing a decade ago.
Yeah.
And still are in a few cities.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was a count. When I started managing stores, it was a countywide thing. Like, yeah. It didn't matter.
Explain blue laws, because some people might be unfamiliar.
Well, at least here in Alabama, in Baldwin County, what it was you couldn't sell alcohol on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, and actually, the way ours ran, it was you couldn't sell alcohol all day, and then they moved it to you couldn't sell it before noon. And then eventually they refined it down to like they gave the municipalities the authority, and most places just went with you could buy all day.
Mm-hmm.
But but that's heavily backed by your Baptist. I mean, that's you know.
Well, what was I remember vaguely the story. I grew up in the Episcopalian Church.
Okay,
and we take wine with communion.
Yeah,
and I remember this story vaguely about the. Our priest on Sunday realizing that there was not enough wine for the communion services and going to the store to buy wine and being refused.
And couldn't buy wine for his service.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Oh, well.
That's, well, you see, and I was raised Baptist, so we always took like grape juice or something.
Yeah.
Or apple juice or something like that.
I went to a Baptist school through fifth grade.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, I asked that question because I was raised in the Episcopal Church, and I was like, "Well, why don't you drink wine? Why is it this grape juice stuff?" And they told me that, you know, back in the early Christian days, that they hadn't refined the fermentation process, and so the wine then was really more like grape juice.
Oh,
well,
wow.
I learned later that the Romans,
who I'm were pretty there sure we figured this Christian out pretty time, early on,
were
right?
quite good at the fermentation process and actually had to water down their wine because it was so strong.
Strong, yeah.
Anyway.
So, that's funny.
Well, but so there's some extensions to this that you then have to start asking questions about.
Yeah.
Like, if they overturn these laws about. You know, about public nudity generally.
Yeah.
What about children? What about children in public? Actually, that's more or less allowed here anyway. Like, you go to a pool, you'll see, like, really young girls.
Oh, yeah.
Oftentimes with no tops on. Like, and when I'm saying really young, I'm, like, 4 to 6, you know.
Like toddlers and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, how about teens?
Yeah.
Wow. Like, there's a real concern about pedophilia and so forth. If you have, like, teenage girls out in public, or guys, I guess. But,
And my response to that, at least offhand, would be, like, I wouldn't let my kids run around like that.
Yeah. But the question is, does the government have a responsibility to preemptively protect them by saying that you can't do this?
It is a tough question because a part of me would say no, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I have a teenage daughter and I know how they can be. So just because when I say they can't run around topless and nobody else is going to stop them, I'm not there 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but you're not there 100% of the time. Neither is the law.
Well,
I guess. Is
what, well, and that's and that's true. So, I mean, that's where it comes down to raising your kids right. I mean, so. But it's a tough question.
Well, so there's a flip side to this too. In my house growing up, we didn't have a taboo on nudity.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, of course, when you get to be a teenager, when you hit puberty, like, there's some weird body issues anyway, just because things are changing
are
and you don't quite understand.
Yeah.
But I think that my brother and I had fewer body issues because we weren't taught to be ashamed about our bodies to begin with.
Yeah.
And so there's some of that here too. Does the like does it make things better for them mentally later if they're not taught to be ashamed about it to begin with?
Yeah.
And I don't know what things were like in your house. Like my house was three guys and a girl growing up, and so was yours.
Yeah.
But now you live in a house with three girls and a guy, and
it's nothing but women.
Yeah. it's, and I don't know if that changes that. Like, does that?
I mean, a little bit, but not as much as you would think.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So this is what I came down with on this. Like, if you're gonna, all right, moral legislation is an issue to begin with, and like so many things that we've talked about on this podcast, like demanding tolerance for something that I disagree with,
yeah.
I think is fair.
Yeah.
Like, I disagree with it as long as you're not hurting anybody, that I have no right to tell you that you can't do it.
Absolutely.
But you reach a point also in some of this legislation where not only am I told that I have to tolerate it, I'm told that I have to approve of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a difference there.
Which is something else entirely.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that either. So what you're saying when you say, well, there shouldn't be any laws that enforce this, just because I disapprove doesn't mean that the state has the right to tell me that somebody can't do that, or that, you know, to tell somebody else that they can't do this, as long as they're not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
And of course that goes, but that also, you know, all right, let me try and square this. They also can't say that you have to put up with it either, right? Like, I mean, or that you have to agree with it.
Yeah.
Right. Nudity in public becomes a kind of a weird issue in that regard, right?
Yeah.
Because just because somebody doesn't approve of nudity doesn't give them the right to tell somebody else that they can't be nude.
Yeah.
But then that nude person is kind of forcing them to accept it in public.
Yeah.
Right? So it kind of goes both ways. And so how do you resolve this? Yeah. And I heard somebody say that the to resolve mutually exclusive goals is the purpose of government. Now, I disagree with that. But and I suppose that's why I settled on the answer that I did, because I think that the purpose of government is to protect people's individual rights.
Yeah.
And so my position on this is that whenever there's a question on this, you settle on the side of least restrictions.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. In which case I would say that public nudity is okay, but then where does that lead? What about, like, you know, is homeless sex okay? Is there a limitation then? Can you have sex in public then? Yeah. If you can be nude in public and you're not restricting these things?
I think there is a pretty sharp line though between being vulgar and being nude. Because I don't think those are the same. To me, at least, those aren't the same thing.
Yeah, they're not the same thing to me.
I mean, if a woman wants to walk around topless, that's one thing. It's totally different when you're committing sex acts.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, and that's, to me, that's kind of where the line is. But everybody kind of defines these lines differently, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. Well, and I think that what you end up with is you just end up with, like, a general cultural feel about it.
Yeah.
And it'll vary from place to place, which is back to that self-government.
Which is why we promote self-government. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's the right way to handle it. I mean, there are areas where, you know, one thing's okay, and you kind of have to know where you're at, you know. And we're here in the South.
You know. And, you know, and the reason that the self-government is so valuable in this case is that, like, you can go wherever it is that the government of that area agrees with you generally.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of...
And if those areas where government has control are smaller, it's easier to move from place to place.
Exactly.
If you put everything up to the federal or even the world level, then there's nowhere I can go.
Well, and you just kind of, you have to think of these laws from, like, a national perspective. So, like, if the federal government was going to enforce nudity laws, there's really no way to come up with a reasonable answer.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, every area is just so different.
Mm-hmm.
But in a situation like this, like, as long as your local municipalities are kind of figuring that out, you know, you can come up with some reasonable answers for the areas you live in.
Yeah, I mean, more conservative Daphne can have strict nudity laws, while next door, more hippie Fairhope can have less restrictive laws.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then if you don't like it here, you can just go to Fairhope. If you want to, if you don't like it, you can go to the beach in Daphne.
Yeah.
If you are okay with it, you can go to the beach in Fairhope.
Yeah. It's, go to the nude beaches in Fairhope.
Right. Or topless, at the very least. Maybe. But yeah, that's exactly the point.
Exactly.
Well, shifting gears a little. this may be a bigger discussion. I turned away from the microphone again. This may be a bigger discussion than we want to handle here. I don't know what our... We'll see what we can do with
it. See where we end up.
Yeah. So I saw this little bit where one of China's senior diplomats said that the U.S. is the greatest source of instability in the world. And I thought, you know, I kind of agree with him.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to talk about this in kind of a historical context, but we'll start with the current. So I think that we made a reason. All right. There's protests all over the place right now.
Absolutely.
Protests in Hong Kong. There's protests in Lebanon. There's protests in Iraq. There's protests in Iran. There's protests in Colombia. There's protests in Venezuela. There's protests
everywhere,
all over the place. Right.
Yeah.
Now.
People are in the streets.
And, so we've talked about Bolivia a little bit, and I think we made a fair case that the U.S. government was kind of involved.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I made the point at the time. I hope I did, because then it makes me a prophet. And if I didn't, then I really regret not saying it at the time, because how smart I would look now. but I think that the big part of the reason that the U.S. would have attempted a regime change in Bolivia, besides the fact that our government has never liked Evo Morales, because he nationalized some industries and so on, preventing U.S. Business takeovers in Bolivia and so forth. Same old communist stuff.
Yeah.
I think that a big part of it was they were unable to get the regime change they wanted in Venezuela, and Bolivia is one of the few South American countries that was still supporting Maduro.
Yeah. No, we absolutely talked about this at the time.
Okay, good.
We did.
Because, like, almost immediately after the self-proclaimed new president of Bolivia, Áñez, who declared herself president after meeting with the military, not with the legislature.
Yeah.
But it's not a coup.
Right.
One of the first acts that she did as president was to recognize Juan Guaido as the legitimate president of Venezuela.
Of course.
Which I think is really funny because you have like one illegitimate president recognizing the legitimacy of another illegitimate president. And I thought about the things that the intelligence services do here in the U.S. all the time when they want to get a story out.
Yeah.
When they leak some information to like the Washington Post or the New York Times, and then some administrator goes out and talks in public about it after the article on the leak comes out, and they use that article as evidence of what they're talking
about. Right. Insane.
It's this weird circular thing.
Yeah, yeah. And making it up as you go.
So that was like the first thing that I thought about. Yeah. And, you know, the U.S. has almost certainly been the cause of a lot of this unrest in South America.
Yeah.
Right. And then we have Iraq.
Yeah.
And I think we made a fair case then too that the U.S. might be involved in overthrowing Mahdi.
Yeah.
Because he is playing too neutral about Iran, and we don't like Iran.
Yeah.
Right.
His own neighbor, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So last week, Mike Pence made a trip to Iraq.
Yeah.
And he met with the quote unquote president of Iraqi Kurdistan, President Barzani.
Okay.
Of Iraqi Kurdistan. And we know Iraqi Kurdistan is not a country.
Yeah. It's just like a.
I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. I believe in self government. But,
yeah. But they're not. Yeah.
But they're not a country. So he goes and he meets with the President Barzani of Iraqi Kurdistan. And this is probably a show that, like, we're still on board with the Kurds, even though, you know, we just left them, which I'm okay with, by the way.
Yeah.
But he did not meet with the actual Iraqi president, Mahdi.
That's interesting.
And I thought, well, this is definitely a display.
Yeah, right? This is a snub.
Yeah, this is a sign that's being given here.
Yep.
I don't know. I was kind of blown away by it, and it just, to me, it's more evidence that we have something to do with this.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, like, all right, so the U.S., I think, undoubtedly has had a positive effect, like more good than bad on the world as a whole in our history.
Okay.
Since the formation of the country. Yeah. And just like the actual formation of the country and our Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
The example things, we set.
Yeah. The old idea of the great beacon of liberty on the hill.
Yeah.
I think that has had a tremendous ripple effect across the world and has improved a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So on the whole, I think that the United States has had a very positive impact on the world. Now, as we've moved forward in history, if we say, look at the last 50 years, I'm starting to have some questions. Like, that takes us back to kind of the middle of the Vietnam War, the middle of the Cold War.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, like, have we still had more positive impact than negative impact? I mean, a lot of people died. Was it really necessary to contain communism? It's self-defeating.
Yeah.
As was evidenced in the end by the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
While China has still maintained something of a communist government, they have liberalized their economy tremendously.
Which is the reason it's growing and doing the things it's doing, is because they're opening up these markets and doing these things.
Yeah. And I think it's the reason that they haven't had a real collapse in China anyway. Yeah. And the funny part, or the ironic part, is that I think that it's also leading to a different kind of revolution in the future.
Yeah.
But we'll see how that goes. And we may talk about that at length some other time.
That'd be a good episode, I think. We need to put that one in our pocket.
Okay. Make a note.
Yep. Done.
And so, you know, as you get into the last 50 years, I start to wonder, like, we've overthrown a bunch of governments. We've decided since the end of World War II that we are the real power. And and then since the fall of the Soviet Union, we are the only power.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it goes to back to the bigger question of you know, have we had a positive impact? It goes back to the whole self-government thing, because here we are, a foreign power, coming into these places and trying to control them.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. And it's not, because a lot of people would argue that, well, the world would be chaos if the U.S. wasn't involved in all of these things. Mm-hmm. What the factor you don't consider, because a lot of people, that's how they look at it. They don't have a deep knowledge of what's going on in these places. Mm-hmm. And they think, well, it'd just be chaos if we weren't there.
Yeah.
And I used to be one of those people, by the way. My little brother reminds me all the time that I have switched sides here. The more I've learned, the more I've came to this conclusion. Mm-hmm. And you just have to look at it through the eyes of that we're the foreign power interfering in these people's homeland. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it through those eyes, and especially the amounts, like, I know where you're going as we refine it down. Mm-hmm. When you get down to the last 20 years,
yeah,
not much of a question.
That we've had more of a negative impact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't, I don't see how you make an argument that we haven't.
Well, you know, just as some examples, there's been a few governments in the world that have been installed by the United States.
Yeah.
Iraq
yeah.
is one of them.
Yeah.
Afghanistan, Ukraine, Egypt. These are some of the most corrupt governments in the world.
Absolutely.
And I think the U.S. is up there in the most corrupt governments in the world, actually, too. Yeah. But
I think most people agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
So
I don't know that that's true, but we're trying to shift people's thinking here.
How often do you talk to people and they're like, man, our government really is looking out for our interests? Those politicians up there in Washington, man, they're looking out for the little guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't hear that. Like, nobody says that.
That's what they say about AOC.
Well, that's what they, here's the thing about that, though. That's what they say about their own mm-hmm. representatives.
I will say for her, by the way, that she did not sign the Patriot Act extension.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, well, hey, credit where credit's due, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't get a lot there, so.
Well, and yeah, these are some of the most corrupt governments in the world, and we're the ones that installed them. This is how, by the way, Zelensky, Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine got elected.
Yeah.
He was on a TV show where he played the president, where, as I understand it, a big part of it was making fun of the corruption of the government.
Yeah.
And he ran on an anti-corruption platform.
Yeah, which is how everybody knew him that watched the show.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting plan there.
Yeah. Hmm. So if you get on TV, you can be elected president, apparently. This is what we're learning from.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe there's a plot that
could Trump did, too.
Well, it is. Maybe we just need to have some show where there's a libertarian president.
Yeah.
And then that guy needs to run.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we got Jacob Hornberger. That's pretty good.
Hey, yeah, I was going to say before this podcast is over, we need to give him a little. We may have already mentioned it, but Hornberger.
Yeah, we've talked about him.
We all need to get behind him. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's time, one of those moments.
He's so good on really
on so everything. Much. I mean.
Yeah. But
yeah,
we'll come back to it.
We're circling.
We'll come back to it. And then I was thinking, like historically speaking, we also installed Iran's Shah.
Yep.
We installed Saddam Hussein.
Yes, we did.
and we talked about on the last episode, we installed Ngo, or however you say his name, in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then overthrew him. Kind of the same we're doing with Mahdi.
Yeah.
Or I think we're doing with Mahdi. So, and then on top of all this, Trump just signed legislation supporting the Hong Kong separatists.
Okay.
And I know they keep calling them protesters because that's how we do it. If we approve of what they're doing, they're protesters.
They're protesters, yeah.
But you know, it's the Hong Kong separatists, really. This democracy movement to try and separate themselves really from the Chinese mainland.
Yeah.
From the Beijing government. And while it is supposed to be one country, two systems, one country is a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so what these bills that he signed did, they're sanctioning officials that have been that are implicated in human rights abuses, ban on crowd control munition sales to China. I think that this is funny.
this is interesting. You have my attention.
Yeah. ban on crowd control munition sales. Now, as I understand it, crowd control munitions are generally non-lethal. So we're going to stop sending the Chinese government non-lethal weapons to put down the protests.
Interesting.
The protests.
Protest, yeah.
So what are they going to do then? Maybe we come back to that.
I don't know. I mean,
I'm pretty sure the Chinese government is capable of producing their own, by the way.
Oh, but yeah, of all things, yeah. I'm sure they got plenty of that stuff.
And then it's going to require a regular confirmation that there is enough independence in Hong Kong to maintain their special trade status with the U.S.
Yeah.
Which is different from the Chinese mainland trade status. That, you know, it's more of a free trade agreement with Hong Kong specifically. So, and this is another thing that's kind of funny. So if we decide that there's not enough separation, then put the same kind of sanctions on trade to Hong Kong that we do on the Chinese mainland, which have been increasing and increasing.
Increasing, yeah.
And is this really going to do well for the people of Hong Kong?
I tell you what would do well for the people of Hong Kong if we started funding them with weapons. I mean, we do it everywhere else,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, don't.
I mean, to me, that's like the next step in those planks you just laid out.
Yeah,
all right, we're going to start arming the rebels.
Yeah, I think that you're. I think that you may be right.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
This does give an opportunity for the U.S. to say, well, all right, I think it leads to a couple of things. First off, it emboldens the already violent protesters.
Oh, absolutely.
These are guys that are throwing Molotov cocktails at police and so forth. They've
had,
like four incidents where live fire
has happened
from the police at the protesters. These protesters that are throwing Molotov cocktails and all this stuff. Now, transplant that to the United States, by the way. Do you think that we would have had 6 months of protests where people were throwing Molotov cocktails at police and police would only have fired on protesters four times?
Never going to happen.
Nope. Yeah. So they're showing incredible restraint, I would say, already.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, not that the police aren't being violent, but too. I mean, people have been beaten. Just think about police
in our country. They'd do far worse, I promise. Especially if they were black.
Yeah. And so we're emboldening these already violent protesters that have been out there waving American flags before now. And now they've got like approval from the American president, which means something more to them than I think it actually means.
Yeah.
And so you embolden these already violent protests to be more violent potentially. And I think it forces China's hand. Yeah. Like at some point they have to like really respond in a way that crushes this.
Yeah.
If you allow it to persist at this point.
Yeah.
And especially if the U.S. is promoting it.
Yep.
And so this brings up another question. And we've talked about the Uyghurs on this podcast before. I think only in passing. But this is the Chinese Muslim subsect, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're like horribly oppressed in China.
Yeah.
And it's kind of it's been an open secret. They move them to these, camps where they try and re-educate them to be more Chinese and, you know, so on. But recently, like in the last week or so, there was a document leaked, from the Chinese government that confirms the existence of all these camps.
Really?
And it's given people the opportunity to get up there and virtue signal about, you know, whatever. But, both in the unrest in Hong Kong and now that we know that there's like pretty severe human rights abuses on the Uyghurs in China, what responsibility does the U.S. have to protect the rights of people in China?
Yeah.
Like, how far does that extend? That's really the question. Like, I am absolutely on board with the U.S. and the international community putting pressure on China. Just like public pressure China.
Public pressure,
to change the way that they're doing things.
Yeah.
But if China doesn't respond,
it's their country. It's not our country.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my take on it as well. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, I mean they have to hash it out on their own.
Yeah, so. I agree. And it made me think, let me try and look it up. I quoted the whole thing before, but there's that speech from John Adams, or maybe Quincy Adams, at the end of his presidency where he talks about going out and seeking monsters to destroy.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, like, there's a part of that that's relevant here, which is where he says, wherever the standard of freedom and independence has been or shall be unfurled, there will be her heart. It's talking about the United States as a country, as a nation, I guess.
Yeah.
There will her heart, her benedictions, and her prayers be. But she goes not abroad in search of monsters to destroy. She is the well-wisher to the freedom and independence of all. She is the champion and vindicator only of her own.
Absolutely.
But this is a sentiment that we have lost here in this country.
Yeah.
That we are in support of you if you want freedom. That, you know, we will publicly proclaim that's what you deserve.
We will send our armies to fight for it.
Yeah, but that's what it's become.
And it just doesn't work. And that's kind of the point I was making earlier. I mean, you send these armies, it's a foreign invader. And it has to come from within.
Yeah.
Same thing in China. Like, China will get there if they want to. And it won't be because we went in there and helped them.
Yeah. Well, in Iraq, the big complaint from the U.S. is this huge influence of Iran in Iraq's government, and that's what they're talking about on the media here as the reason for these protests, is because they're upset about Iran's involvement in their government.
Yeah.
What they're not telling you is that they're also upset with the U.S.'s involvement in their government.
Absolutely.
Even though the Iraqi government is now a Shia government that aligns itself reasonably with Iran, they're opposed to domination from outside, no matter who it's coming from.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's a formula that doesn't work. And you would think after all of these years and all of this that we would recognize that, and we don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess that's our point. Like, we support personal liberty.
Absolutely.
We support self-government.
Yep.
We do not support it at the point of a gun.
Yep. There you go. Wrapped up in a bow.
Yeah. And, you know, like we used to kind of try and end these things in quotes. And there's a good one, and I think I've used it before too, but that's fine.
Yeah. We can recycle.
We've got to be reminded of these things from time to time. There's an old Lakota Sioux proverb that's something like, force, no matter how concealed, begets resistance.
Yeah. Nice.
All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving again, everyone.
Enjoy it. Eat lots of food.
Still looking for that feedback.
Yeah. Talk about the podcast to your family members.
Yeah.
I'm sure it won't create any divisiveness at the...
No. This is the perfect time to talk politics. Right? All your family's together, you're drinking a little bit, full of food. At least nobody can get up and chase anyone.
Exactly.
Yeah. So follow us on Facebook, subscribe on iTunes or Podbean, share, like.
Yeah.
Share personally too. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, this is at least a good time. Hey, if you start to get in one of these political discussions with your family members and things are going badly, just say, you know what? Like, we don't need to talk about it. Just listen to the Liberty Mic.
Yeah. We got the answers for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was fun. We'll be back in a week, right? Like,
As of right now, I see nothing standing in the way of Thursday again.
All right.
I mean, we did it on Thanksgiving. I mean, what else, right?
Yeah. Remember, we were working on Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yep.
We'll be back on Thursday when we finally get this right. And in the meantime, try to stay free.
Train how you fight.
Ciao.
Later.